Welcome to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. Thanks for listening this week. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Well, it's a controversial opinion this week from the Florida Supreme Court. They say tens of thousands of residents in the state with a prior felony conviction will have to pay all fines and fees attached to their offense before they can get their voting rights restored. This despite the passage of Amendment 4. That's the measure voters approved in 2018, restoring the voting rights of former felons.
This is all big news this week. It happened after Florida voters overwhelmingly okayed that amendment, Melissa, right? Republican state lawmakers then argued the new constitutional addition needed rules on how to implement it. So a state law was passed that requires felons to serve any time in prison and pay all fines and fees assessed because of their crime.
Now, critics around the nation are calling the Florida Supreme Court's ruling a modern-day poll tax. And they've pointed out as well that there are no black justices on the state's high court after it rules on a matter that primarily affects voters of color here in the Sunshine State.
And the advisory opinion this week from the Florida's high court is not the last word on this issue. There's a separate federal court case tackling a separate question. So the ruling or the advisory this week from the Florida Supreme Court, what does it mean to complete all terms of a felony conviction in Florida? Should a felon be required to pay all fines in order to be able to vote again? Or is that essentially a poll tax? Your phone calls and tweets are coming up later on in the program. We can line them up now. 305-995-1800. That is the phone line. 305-995-1800. Or you can send us your thoughts on Twitter at Florida Roundup is our handle. Neil Volz, we welcome back to the Florida Roundup. He is with the Florida Rights Restoration Coalition with us from our sister station in Fort Myers, WGCU. Neil, welcome back to the program. Nice to have you.
Oh, thanks for having me on the show.
Your reaction to the court opinion, the advisory opinion that came out earlier this week, what is it?
Well, ultimately, just so people know who we are as the Florida Rights Restoration Coalition, we're an organization that's led by returning citizens, people with past felony convictions like myself. Our membership are returning citizens. We've got chapters all over the state. And this was a reminder of the power of Amendment 4, that Amendment 4 represented the largest expansion of democracy we've seen in the country in the last 50 years. And we're working through that process. This is yet another step. And we've obviously remained consistent about what completion of sentence means. And that's why we worked so hard with the judicial circuit, with the Florida legislature, with fellow citizens to develop pathways for people with financial obligations to complete their sentences. And this is just another step in that process, a process that is still continuing today.
It's a very measured response here, Neil. You were part of the organization, of course, that push this case forward, so to speak, and the governor released this letter asking for the high court's opinion, which came out this week. And part of the arguments that were made was that the supporters of the amendment, the Florida Rights Restoration Coalition and the Floridians for a Fair Democracy, your group, acknowledged in previous iterations that a full serving of a sentence included all four corners. In other words, included the fines and fees and restitution. Did it not?
Yeah, I mean, from our perspective, from the get-go, we have operated with several basic kind of premises. One, we're operating from the basic values of the belief in forgiveness, restoration and redemption. And we saw that connect with people all across the state. We also operated under basic understanding that completion of sentence included financial obligations. And we know that, you know, we're now getting into the process where, you know, litigators are going to litigate, legislators are going to legislate, you know, administrators are going to administrate. And we are really focused as an organization on the people. Our North Star are the real lives of real people who are operating today under the letter of the law, and also understanding that there's systems and processes around us that are shifting based on different court decisions, based on different legislative maneuvering, but that we are focused squarely on the well-being of returning citizens. And so we will move quickly with urgency today because we don't think we have a minute to waste when you're talking about somebody's life.
All right. So with that focus, Neil, on the people affected here, should fines, fees, or restitution and restitution be considered to be included in the term, all terms of a sentence, which is a key phrase in the amendment?
Yeah, I mean, we campaigned all across the state talking about the simple concept, like a universal truth that we felt that people could connect with, you know, from all backgrounds. And that was this idea that when a debt's paid, it's paid. And included in that process was an acknowledgement that that meant financial obligations. We talked about restitution. We talked about finishing probation, which it includes financial obligations. Mm-hmm. And so we understand that there's this process right now of kind of making sure that we dig in a little bit deeper into exactly what that means, and we're going to operate and we're going to let these things come to us, and we're just going to get up every day and continue to move forward looking out for the best interests of the real people impacted by these things. So I think that if I can, sometimes we get questions asked of us a little bit more from the perspective of like, oh, is this an R or a D? Is this a red or a blue? Is this a yes or a no? And we're a little bit like, we see it from a little bit of all those angles.
Yeah.
And we're really just focused on like, hey, how does this impact somebody living right here, right now in Fort Myers or Fort Lauderdale, mm-hmm. or, you know, Tampa? And what does that mean in their real life, and how can we help them?
And I want to ask you those questions after this advisory opinion has been released. But I do want to get back to that phrase. It sounds like you, to some degree, agree with the court advisory opinion that all terms of a sentence, that phrase includes restoration, fines, and fees.
Yeah, I mean, that is something that we have talked about. We supported a piece of legislation in the legislature last time that included financial obligations as a part of that definition. So again, I think that there's 38, 40 pages of that advisory opinion, and it is an advisory opinion. So I know that has a different application in the law, but it also might have a real world implication in terms of how the Amendment 4 is administered, mm-hmm. Through the Secretary of State, the Division of Elections. So like its impact might be seen more on the regulatory side immediately. So really for us, we come at this more from a morality perspective, right? Like I created a breach in my community when I broke the law. And for me to have full restoration includes making sure that I'm fully paid back and dealt with the punishment that my community gave to me, so that I can become a better member of my community, help lead, take those negatives and turn them into a positive. And we see so many. I mean, the beautiful thing about Amendment 4 was on election night, people were not voting for a political cause. They were not voting for a politician or even an ideology. They were voting for a friend, a neighbor, a loved one, someone they knew, and love won the day that day. And we want to continue to operate with this spirit that underneath all of these administrative and legal conversations are real people,
right,
in our communities, and we can make Florida a better place if we just keep taking steps forward together. So
yeah.
I know sometimes that makes it a little hard to kind of get into the you know.
Now, you know, public
court,
public radio is all about getting into the weeds,
yeah,
and talking about,
yep,
this. And you know this. And you know, the language in the amendment was really in focus here with the state Supreme Court. Is focused in the federal case as well, which we can talk about a little bit later on. And not to parse the language at all, the high court really, in its opinion, didn't want to parse the language. It wanted to take it real-world meanings in context, and so it led to this advisory opinion that fees, fines, and restitution is included in the phrase terms of a sentence, all terms of a sentence. So what is the impact of this advisory opinion here, for instance, as we're moving up to a presidential preference primary in March in Florida?
Well, I think what we can anticipate seeing in terms of its immediate impact will be that the Division of Elections and the Secretary of State's office will begin to promulgate rules and will begin to administer underneath the guidance of this advisory opinion the eligibility requirements that currently exist under Senate Bill 766. So I think what we're going to see is somebody who's walking with returning citizens in every county of this state is that we're going to start to see more questions, and people are going to, you know, call us and ask us, you know, hey, what does this mean? I got a letter in the mail, or you know what? I'm trying to figure out my fines and fees situation. Can you connect me up with a person who can help me with that? And that's kind of our role here is that we walk with returning citizens. We are returning citizens, and it's through the application of the law. And a commitment to completely operating under the letter of the law, that we begin to see the challenges faced by returning citizens, and we think that that can be helpful because we've seen that there are legislators and people who are willing to listen, who can then change those policies to help create a better system going forward.
Yeah. So in the immediate term, how do you answer those folks that are questioning? You know, perhaps they already have registered and are wondering, can they participate in the March presidential primary legally under this court advisory?
So what we tell our fellow returning citizens in our community meetings, or if they call us, is that there's a process that plays out here, that if you've been registered and you're currently voting, then you're currently voting. What will happen or could happen is you could get a letter sent to you in the mail, and that letter could involve your eligibility to vote in your community. That is the trigger for us, for people to call us. We would like to then talk to somebody about a real world situation that somebody's dealing with, because then you can actually get into it, almost on a case by case, person by person basis. And that's our perspective. Mm-hmm. Again, everybody has different roles to play in this process. Our North Star, and it will not change, are the real lives of returning citizens who are impacted by Amendment 4.
Neil Volz is with us. Neil, stand by. Neil's with the Florida Rights Restoration Coalition. He's with us from our sister station, WGCU in Fort Myers, talking about the advisory opinion this week that was released from the Florida Supreme Court, that the full restoration of voting rights for felons in Florida requires paying any fines, fees, or restitution that's included in a prison term. We're going to take your tweets and your phone calls coming up. That phone number, 305-995-1800.
Well, State Senator Jeff Brandis, Republican of Pinellas County, helped write the law that requires Florida residents with a felony conviction to pay off fines and fees before they can cast a ballot. And he joins us now. Senator Brandis, thanks for being with us.
Glad to be with you. Thanks.
A coalition of civil rights groups has condemned this advisory opinion from the Florida Supreme Court, among them the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, the Brennan Center for Justice. They've said the ruling cannot alter what the Constitution requires, that the state cannot deny people the right to vote because of an inability to pay financial obligations. So what's your response to the critics of this issuing of the opinion? They're calling it a modern-day poll tax here in Florida.
Well, I think you started by saying that I wrote this piece of legislation, but understand all we did from this legislation is take the exact same words that were in the constitutional amendment that said you had to pay all terms of your sentence and include those in the legislation. And so what we're focused on here is, what did voters believe? What did they understand? Was it confusing? Or was it straightforward? Was the language on the constitutional amendment very straightforward and easily understood? Because if it wasn't easily understood, if there's some confusion about the language of all terms of sentence, then the Supreme Court then has to go back and say, well, should we just remove this constitutional amendment from the ballot? I mean, should we undo what the voters did because there was some confusion as to the language? Should we throw this back off of the ballot and undo the vote?
Well, at the time, the Florida Rights Restoration Coalition really criticized the legislature on this. They said that the amendment was self-executing. They pointed out that more than 60% of the voters overwhelmingly approved it in a bipartisan fashion.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And you yourself have been critical of the inconsistent way Florida levies fines and fees. A lot of people who have them don't even know how much they owe. There's no state agency tasked with tracking the data. The state doesn't know how much restitution is even owed cumulatively. They levy wildly varying fines and fees depending on the jurisdiction. There's no rhyme or reason to it. Is it fair to ask people to track down how much they owe? And is it fair to ask an indigent person to pay off what could be tens of thousands of dollars in fines for an offense that happened a long time ago and the penalties keep mounting up cumulatively. Is that fair?
Well, I think the question is this what the Constitution requires? If you go back and listen to the testimony of the attorney for Amendment 4, John Mills, he was the professor emeritus at the University of Florida. John Mills stood up there, and the justices asked many of those questions. How does this process unfold? How do you vision this? What's included in all terms of sentence? And he clearly said all terms of sentence means all terms of sentence, everything within the four corners of the sentencing document. And he actually went through the process that he believed someone would have to go through. He said they'd have to go back and check with their clerks. He says it's all – everything is on the felon to get resolved. It's that the burden lies with them. And so – I think,
but there's been a wealth of data to show that it's sometimes almost impossible for people to even find out how much they owe because the state has kept records in such a disorganized way.
I think the question really was it was a bifurcated choice up until last year. You either a felon or you were not a felon, right? And so the state never had to keep the information in a format by which we had to determine how much you consistently owed in multiple jurisdictions, because if you committed a felony in four different counties, we would have to go, you know, there was no running up the flagpole. It was, are you a felon? Are you not a felon? And that had been essentially the way it had been since time immemorial in Florida. And then we changed the law in November and the law went into effect in January. It's hard to imagine a system that could stand up in 2 months in the entire state of Florida to try to fix this. So I think it's ultimately going to take a number of years to work.
Let me ask you this as a follow-up. Governor DeSantis tweeted out yesterday that voting is a privilege when he supported this decision. Do you believe that voting is a right or that
it's
a privilege?
Absolutely, it's a right. No, absolutely it's a right. But it's a right you must maintain, right? It's a right that you maintain in Florida under the Constitution of the state of Florida. By being a felon who has paid, if you are a felon, one who has paid all terms of your sentence.
But if people cannot afford to pay, literally cannot afford to pay,
sure,
what could be tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars in some cases, should they be prevented from voting? An indigent, a poor person.
Well, that's why the Constitution says you have to complete all terms of your sentence, and that's why we created a waiver process for them to go back to the court system and to make their plea to the court system in order to get a waiver if that was in fact the case. So the system is already in place for them. And in fact, communities are using it today. Hillsborough County is using some type of system. I'm sure it's 100% appropriate the way they're doing it. Same in Miami-Dade. I think they're using a waiver type of system. But the flexibility for somebody to go back to the judge and say, Judge, look, you know, this happened 20 years ago. I owe, you know, $30,000. I can't pay $30,000. I can get someplace closer to, you know, two or three. And let the judge review the facts of the case and waive it if possible.
I'm getting tweets, by the way, Senator Brandes, from listeners pointing out the 24th Amendment to the Constitution. Section 1, the right of citizens to vote shall not be denied or abridged or any state by reason of failure to pay any poll tax or other tax. Are you a fellow of the Constitution?
Of course I'm a fellow of the Constitution. I believe the
state
Supreme Court.
Are you a
fellow
of the Constitution?
Oh, no, because I'm sure the state Supreme Court has reviewed the 24th Amendment, and the expert legal scholars on the Florida Supreme Court and, frankly, the U.S. Supreme Court and Judge Hinkle, who is a federal district court of appeals, is perfectly capable of understanding the complexities in case law around the U.S. Constitution. But that's the interesting thing here is now the Florida Supreme Court has ruled or has issued their opinion and has found that this is, one, constitutional, two, that it complies with the Florida Constitution, and three, that all terms of sentence means truly all things included in a sentencing document.
Keep the conversation going with you, Senator, along with your calls here on the Florida Roundup. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. Thanks for being with us this Friday. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville.
And I'm Tom Hudson in Miami, talking about the Florida Supreme Court opinion that was released this week regarding the implementation law for Amendment 4. Amendment 4 was passed overwhelmingly by Florida voters to restore voting rights for felons after they completed all terms of their sentence. The High Court this week issuing an opinion that that includes fines, fees, and restitution. 305-995-1800, 305-995-1800, or on Twitter at Florida Roundup. Neil Volz is with the Florida Rights Restoration Coalition. He is still with us, and Senator Jeff Brandis, a Republican from the 24th District, with us still via FaceTime. Let's get right to the phone calls, lots of them, beginning in the Panhandle. Robert in Panama City. Thanks for holding on, Robert. You're on the radio. Go ahead.
Hey, thank you very much. Good day to everybody. I hope everybody's doing well. My opinion on this whole situation is I think they've done the Florida voters and the Florida citizens who are law-abiding, they've done them a grave disservice, because now we're starting to incorporate a portion of the population and giving them suffrage when they have proven that they the laws that are existing. And I know a lot of people are uncomfortable sitting in a situation where you have people that you know are high recidivists, or and allowing them to be in the lawmaking business. And second, I think that the lady that was talking is committing a level of analysis error. When you look at that, she keeps calling this a poll tax. If it's written into the Constitution, this is by definition not a tax. It's ridiculous to try to do that. It's a semantic.
Well, I didn't say it's a poll tax. Yeah. I said civil rights groups have called it a poll tax.
You've certainly been insinuating that the entire. I've been listening to you the entire time.
Well, Robert, there's plenty of critics that have used that phrase, but we hear you. I understand your concern there about why restore rights for people that have committed crimes and have shown that they're an inability to follow the law. Neil Volz, let me ask you to respond to Robert and Robert's concern and criticism.
I appreciate where Robert's coming from, and it reminds me of conversations that we had all over the state as we were debating Amendment 4. As somebody who has a past felony conviction, who is continually asking for grace and trying to live out some grace, I give people grace all the time and understand that there's a freedom that goes with the give and take of public debate. So I appreciate his comments a lot, but I do know that the issue of a lifetime voting ban for people with fast felony convictions is what was at the heart of Amendment 4. And the public decided that issue. We ended the lifetime ban for people in Florida and our ability to vote. And so now we're engaging in these next steps and this conversation about completing a sentence and exactly what those definitions are. I think this conversation is healthy, and it reminds me, the advisory opinion reminds me of why we work so hard with people like Senator Brandis and others to develop pathways for people who, are someone like me, right? I can promise you there's not a better evangelist for democracy in our society than someone who lost the ability to vote and then got it back. And so there's multiple sides to this story. But our mission is to try and work as hard as we can right here, right now, to get as many people who are yearning for that freedom and that full citizenship of being able to participate in their community a pathway to get there. And that is a part of our call, and that would be my response to what is his right to have his own personal views about this topic.
Lots of tweets coming into the Florida Roundup. Here's one from Bethany. The measure passed by 65%. Republican-leaning legislators, the governor, and the courts don't want to lose their power. So they're arguing semantics to keep that electorate from voting. Here's one from Michael. I believe the narrative of this story is how the state has completely disregarded Florida voters. We voted for Amendment 4. The Republican-led legislature fought in every way to curtail or limit it. In effect, they're using their appointed justices to limit all of our voting rights, he says. And one more from Scott. This is simply a poll tax that disenfranchises lower-income Floridians. Let's go to Bill in Ocala. Hello, Bill. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm actually a felon. I got out in 2016. I did five hard years. first-time offender, nonviolent, basically a theft charge, did 5 hard years of labor, got out, have a possible sentence on probation, paying restitution, over $100,000. I'll never be able to pay it. The judge put that in the sentencing order before he put me in prison as a first-time offender. I got out. I saw Amendment 4. I got excited. I voted every year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're having a little trouble hearing you, Bill. Go ahead. Yeah. Okay, so do you know whether you'll be able to cast a ballot or not?
As far as I know, until I pay this impossible amount of restitution, I'll never be able to vote.
And how much did you say it was?
Over $100,000.
Wow. Okay. Well, Bill, I'm sorry to hear that. Let's go to Senator Brandis to get his response. So, and by the way, there are two states that ban felons, former felons, from voting, lifetime bans. They are Iowa and Kentucky. Florida left that group when Amendment 4 passed, ending the lifetime ban. So, Senator Brandis, what about that bill in Ocala saying there's no way he can ever pay off what he owes the state? And what's your response?
Well, I think the voters have made it very clear that they expect all terms of conditions to be paid, all terms of the sentence to be paid before someone is eligible to vote in Florida. I think that's what the legislature put in place, which is just to mirror the exact same language of the constitutional amendment. This is not the legislature taking a purview one way or the other. It's literally the people of the state of Florida who overwhelmingly, including myself, supported Amendment 4 because we didn't believe in the lifetime ban, and there had to be a path to redemption. So I think we should, if Bill has some concerns, there's a process for amending the Constitution, and we should work to follow that process.
Senator Brandis, Neil Volz, let me bring in one more call here on this topic in Merritt Island. Daniel on line 12. Go ahead, Daniel. You're on the radio now.
Hi. I'm a physician, and many of my patients are poor and have had problems with the law. Now, to me, the language of the amendment was clear. It included completion of probation and payments of fines and restitution. The fly in the ointment that was added later by Governor DeSantis are court fees. Court fees are not a punishment for the crime. They're just money that the judges appropriate to pay their own salaries because, they're not really paid by the taxpayers. Now, very few poor people in Florida who are accused of crimes actually get a trial. Invariably, they get the public defender, they get a negotiated plea, and for them just to be able to complete the probation is hard enough.
Daniel, you bring up a really important point. We're just short on time, but definition
it's
between fines
were not in the amendment,
yep.
and it's clearly just a political maneuver.
Let's have the senator and Neil Volz talk about that. Fines, right? Fines are part of a legal penalty, a sentence. Certainly, when you're fined and sentenced to prison, restitution, ordered to pay restitution. What about this idea of court fees being applied here, Neil Volz, in terms of the four corners of the sentencing document?
Well, two things real quick. One, there are multiple cases, right? So we had the state Supreme Court and the federal Supreme Court, and there seemed to be some overlap and overlay around this topic. And again, like I mentioned at the beginning, I'm not here as an attorney. I am here as an advocate for people. And if I could take 30 seconds to just say something to Bill and Ocala, man, like, have hope, bro. Call 877-MY-VOTE-0, 877-MY-VOTE-0. We are committed to working with people and developing pathways to help get access to courts so that those folks who really want to express themselves in their community and help lead, that we can be helpful. I can't make promises, but I do want to give you some hope, bro.
Senator Brandis, how about to Daniel Merritt Island and the separation between fines, restitution, and fees?
Well, I think now that we have a clear opinion by the state Supreme Court, the legislature should go back and review the fines and fees in statute to figure out what is mandatory, what is discretionary, what can be waived, and what can't. I think this will hopefully lead to a deeper discussion about fines and fees in the state of Florida, because I agree, some of them are egregious.
But should they be considered as part of the four corners of the sentencing document?
Well, the Supreme Court says they should.
And what about Senator Brandis?
Well, the Supreme Court has already said that they're considered part of the fines and fees. I think the legislature would lean to the court as to their definition of all terms of sentence. So, but I think
what about what about the injunction? A judge, there's another federal lawsuit out there. Another judge is saying people genuinely unable to pay should still be able to vote. What about that?
Well, I think that comes down to a whole nother set of questions, which is, what's the process then? And I think that's obviously under an appeal right now to the federal Supreme Court, or to the federal District Court of Appeals. And so we're constantly reviewing that. Understand that case only applies to 17 people. We need to, if that's, we'll see ultimately how that's going to play out. That might end up in the U.S. Supreme Court.
Yeah. Senator Jeff Brandis, a Republican representing the 24th District, with us via FaceTime from St. Petersburg. Senator Brandis, stick around. We're going to talk to you about another separate issue coming up in a few moments. Neil Volz with the Florida Rights Restoration Coalition with us from WGCU. Neil, thanks for your time today on the Roundup.
I really appreciate you guys shining a light on this issue.
Our pleasure. You are listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio.
Well, so Florida voters will not get the chance to decide the fate of recreational marijuana this year, but state lawmakers might. St. Petersburg Republican Senator Jeff Brandis, who we'll talk to in a moment about this, has proposed legislation that would make cannabis legal to Floridians at least 21 years of age. We'll hear from him on that issue in a moment. But first, the group that had been pushing hard to put the question of legalizing weed on the November ballot for recreational use, well, they gave up their efforts this month, just a few weeks short of the deadline to hand in petition signatures. Here's Nick Hansen, chairman of Make It Legal Florida.
It really just came down to a function of timing. We looked at the amount of petitions we collected. We're north of 700,000 today, and we felt we would need to engage in a lawsuit with the Secretary of State, which we did file to sort of validate all petitions turned in by the deadline, which is not the standard now. The standard is they have to be validated and transmitted by the deadline. We felt we'd be successful in that effort, but even with that relief that we thought we would get, I think we would still be a little short. And really it comes back to a significant delay caused by the new implementation of HB 5, particularly with the website to register our paid circulators. And we effectively lost, close to 30 days of collections because of that, but still, are coming very close. And as of today, I think we're at almost 330,000 validated.
But a higher bar for you to meet. Still, though, you were less than 100,000 signatures away. And, so why not go all the way up till February 1st?
Well, I think it's a matter of, resources for, continuing the legal fight, which wasn't a while we felt we would be successful. It would be, is there still some ambiguity of how long the courts take and what would be the actual relief and also those final collections. And I think for all parties involved, they wanted to be a little bit more definitive, sort of known knowns before putting in even more resources. And we just didn't feel like we would be successful enough on all those different fronts.
So what happens now with the signatures you've already collected, and what are your next steps?
Well, we're still collecting and shipping, every week to the Supervisor of Elections. We're going to continue to process those. We are actively collecting. I think the one thing I'd love to get out there is that if folks have petitions, those are still valid. They're valid for 2 years under the current law, and we are going to continue to push forward. We are submitting briefs to the Supreme Court for our Supreme Court review. So we are active. I mean, my hope is that before, halfway point of this year, or, maybe within the 40, 45 days, we would have total validation of to make the 2022 ballot. So we are not taking our foot off the gas in that respect, but we are, taking one of the things that sort of played into this is you have to have a certain threshold in half of the congressional districts, and you don't really know where your deficiencies are until they validate enough signatures. So we're going to, once everything that's in the pipeline and with the secretaries or supervisors of elections are validated, we'll sort of know where we have a couple of deficiencies to make that 766,200 threshold.
So as you look ahead to 2022, Will you work with other efforts on this? There's another group called Regulate Florida. They would have allowed, their amendment would have allowed Floridians to grow their own marijuana. Will you join with them or continue with the more narrow legalization measure you're seeking?
Well, once our language is validated, it has to be that language. So there's no, no amending the language or changing it once it's on the ballot. So I would hope, Regulate Florida and Mr. Minardi, who we've had a very cordial and open relationship, since we both got into this, we would hope that the folks who support Regulate Florida would support ours. I think you use the term narrow, and we really did craft the amendment to be built off of the 2016 successful medical marijuana amendment, and what we tried to do there is give the Supreme Court no reason to throw our language off, and that's why we had to tailor it. We have very high hurdles in the state of Florida in order for Supreme Court review. So that's really the reason for the tailoring.
Sure, series of hurdles seems to have paused this effort, at least for now, in Florida. How frustrating is that for you, given that polling shows more than 60% of voters support the sale of legal marijuana?
It's frustrating, but if you look at where we are today in terms of the conversation of adult use marijuana, where we were a year ago or 6 months ago, I would make the argument we've moved the needle significantly, not just by our efforts, but as other efforts that are out there. We are talking about it openly. We've got a major legislation filed in the legislature in both the House and the Senate, one from a prominent Republican that's very similar to our amendment. So, we're disappointed about not getting on the 2020 ballot, but we're also understand that we've moved significantly, and in a state that a year ago nobody would have thought this would be possible. So, we're excited. We're looking at some things that are happening in the legislature now as it pertains to ballot access and amendment collections that they're looking to change, and keeping our eye on those things because we feel very strongly these petitions are valid for 2 years, and we will have enough to make the 2022 ballot this year. So we are watching those movements in the legislature, and hopefully we're gearing up for our oral arguments before the Supreme Court.
That was Make It Legal Florida Chair Nick Hansen. Coming up, we'll go back to Senator Jeff Brandis on his push to legalize recreational marijuana in Florida. What are your thoughts? Call the Florida Roundup now. 305-995-1800. We'll go to your calls and tweets on this in just a moment. This is the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio.
Welcome back to the Florida Roundup this week here on Florida Public Radio. Thanks for listening. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Well, as we've been hearing, there will not be a proposed constitutional amendment legalizing marijuana on the ballot for you, the Florida voters, to consider this fall. Still, though, lawmakers in Tallahassee are considering legislation that would make cannabis legal in the state for recreational use. Where do you stand on that? Do you use medical marijuana? And do you think that the drug should be legalized fully in the state or not? Give us a call, 305-995-1800, tweets to @FloridaRoundup.
St. Petersburg Republican Senator Jeff Brandis is still with us. He is behind a bill that would legalize pot in Florida for anyone 21 years and older. Senator Brandis, why do you support recreational marijuana?
Well, I think if you look at our piece of legislation, it does really three things. It breaks up the current cartel system. The legislature established a number of years ago when it set up a medical marijuana system that required vertical integration. That has led to higher prices and less access for patients, and frankly kept small businesses out of the business of medical marijuana. So one, we break up that vertically integrated cartel, and two, we look to allow adults to use. For me, this is a liberty of freedom, and this is a freedom and liberty issue. And so let's enhance personal freedom. We see that over a supermajority of Floridians support this concept of adult use, and many states are moving in this direction.
Is it better? There's a third piece of this, which is related to previous marijuana possession charges, which I'll ask about in a moment here. But regarding the legalization for Floridians 21 years old and older for recreational use. Is it your preference? I imagine it is for you and your fellow lawmakers to write these laws as opposed to having Florida voters decide this via a statewide amendment, correct?
Well, I think to me, I'm not as concerned about how we get there, but that we get there. I do think that it offers for the legislature more flexibility. And so my counsel to my fellow legislators is let's take this issue on and address it head on versus a constitutional amendment that will give us less flexibility in the future to make to address amendments and things of that nature. But you know, for me, whether we get there via constitutional amendment, which is how most states get there, mm-hmm. or via the
legislature. That's how we got here with medical marijuana was a constitutional
amendment. Correct.
Yeah.
Right. So it doesn't, to me, it's that we get there.
Let me just ask, there is certainly a vested interest in the part of the state because tax revenue could be collected here. What would be the tax rate under your legislation for recreational marijuana?
So we just charge the sales tax. So it would be 6%.
And could local governments institute their own sales tax as they currently can?
That I believe so. Yeah, I don't think there's a prohibition against the 1 cent. You know, generally they do these little add-on taxes,
right.
1 cent here or there.
As you mentioned, it also would break up what's called the vertically integrated model that was in the medical marijuana legislation. The Florida governor, Ron DeSantis, has called that system a cartel. Has that been keeping prices artificially high in your estimation?
I think it keeps prices high. I think it hurts supply. I mean, anybody who's been a patient, and I've talked to patients as late as yesterday, who have had the experience of going in and having to wait hours to get their medical cannabis, especially if they're buying whole flower, because of just the breakup and the lack of supply, and the concern that the quality of that product is subpar, because they're just pushing it out and not really having access to the appropriate amount or quality that they believe is appropriate.
So would separate growers be required to have a state license under this legislation?
They would, yeah. But you would be able to contract out. You would be able to buy from a variety of different sources. So if somebody runs out of a product, the problem is today if somebody runs out of a product, they can't go to anybody else to get to the wholesale market.
But that product would still have to come from inside Florida, correct?
It would still have to come
right.
from inside Florida.
Yeah.
But we believe there's room for hundreds of growers, a handful of processors, and a number of retailers. Mm. We think that allows small businesses to be in the business. Today, you have to have $40, $50, $100 million to be in the business of medical marijuana because you have to have the whole vertically integrated structure.
So let me ask you finally about the third piece of this proposed legislation, which proposes to expunge previous marijuana possession charges. How broad-based is that proposal?
Well, it really looks at people who have simple possession charges in the past. We think there's thousands of people out there who have been convicted of simple possession. And if the legislature is going to legalize adult use, we should look back and get rid of those convictions. And so this
creates possession level. What possession level would you propose that to begin at?
Well, with the possession level that's accommodated in the bill. So clearly, you know, in Florida, trafficking is essentially anything over 25 pounds. So clearly not traffickers, but possession is very different than trafficking.
So would it be possession of any amount under 25 pounds?
It is simple possession. So as we define.
But at what amount?
It would generally anything that would be convicted under simple possession laws.
Senator Brandis, stick around here talking about Senator Brandis's legislative effort to legalize recreational marijuana in Florida after a citizen-led petition drive ended. It will not be on the ballot this fall for voters to decide recreational marijuana. 305-995-1800.
And this is the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Let's go to Maria. She has a son using medical marijuana. Hi, Maria. Go
Hi,
ahead. What are your thoughts? Good, thanks. Go ahead.
It took me quite a while to be able to actually obtain medical marijuana under Florida law. And now we can do it. You go to the dispensary and basically you kind of buy whatever because there's still not a lot of studies as far as dosaging and whatnot. So at this point, the steps of recreational, I think it's just a matter of time. I think it should be at this point. I think we realize that marijuana is much more benign than alcohol. So if people want to get high, let them get high as long as it's responsible and they're not driving and doing whatever, you know, that's my thought.
All right, Maria, thanks. And certainly a majority of the state's voters agree with you there. Senator Brandis, though, here's a tweet for you. If we legalize it, what happens to the countless people in jail for nonviolent drug offenses or the ones with nonviolent drug possession charges? What about that question?
Well, there's obviously many people in jail for drugs largely other than marijuana. I mean, there are the idea that our prisons are filled with people who are in for simple possession simply isn't true. Drug possession, just drug charges in general, are about 12 to 15% of our prison population. Most of them are in for drugs, not marijuana. I mean, they're in for you know, heroin,
right?
Cocaine,
but should the people doing time, should the people doing time be freed? According to statistics I'm pulling up as you talk, 52% of all drug arrests in the last decade were for marijuana.
Oh, I'm sure for
half
arrest.
Of all drug busts.
And that's why.
Yeah, but that, I mean, there are people sitting in jail in Florida right now. Should they be let out if we legalize?
If it's legal, absolutely. That's the whole – if you look at my legislation, that's what it does. It looks at existing convictions for individuals who have simple possession charges.
Let's go to Joseph in Apopka. Joseph, what are your thoughts about this?
Good afternoon. Yes, I wanted to mention a documentary that was done on CNN. I think it must have been about a year and a half ago by Dr. Gupta. And he cited a great deal of research indicating that the use of cannabis could be used to withdraw from opioid addiction. And that documentary and that subject has not gotten much attention. I don't know why. You know, cannabis has been helpful also in epilepsy. So I don't get it.
Right. Thanks for that, Joseph. And yeah, and certainly proponents of legalizing for medical use made all those arguments when that change was made in the state. Senator Brandis, have you looked at those numbers, how legal cannabis could affect the state's opioid crisis?
Absolutely. I think somebody who would shift from using opioids over to cannabis if as an addiction would be much better off in the world of cannabis, where I have never heard of somebody dying from cannabis overdoses versus opioids, where essentially every family in Florida has some relationship to somebody who has passed away with an addiction to opioids. So I think that it would be much more beneficial for us to have adult use medical cannabis, and in the states that do have it, they are seeing an impact to the opioid addictions and overdoses that is occurring.
Let's bring in one more call very quickly. It's Karen in Fernandina Beach. Hi, Karen. We're almost off the air. Go ahead quickly.
Hi. Well, I just wanted to mention that as long as it's illegal, then there are still going to be growers, sellers, and users in the state of Florida. And why not make it recreationally legal and stop the police and everyone else from trying to arrest people and put them in jail for something that's really less harmful than alcohol?
Thank you, Karen. That's the argument you're making, Senator. Will it gain traction, though? Will you have the votes, I guess, is the question.
I think what these three phone calls have highlighted is that it's a matter of when, not if. And I think that's why the legislature should take this issue on, should lead on it, and should do it this session.
I guess we'll find out, won't we? It should be an interesting few weeks to watch this move, right, Tom?
It's a pretty declarative sentence from the senator from St. Petersburg. Yeah, a lot on the agenda. You got time to get it done?
Absolutely. We've got lots of time to get it done. We've just started. This is our first week. We won't be finished till mid-March.
Lots happening in Tallahassee, so we appreciate your time. Jeff Brandis of Pinellas County joining us to talk about two big issues for the state of Florida, and lots of interesting calls and tweets and emails from all over Florida this hour. Senator Brandis, thank you so much for your time this Friday.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Well, that is our show, and thanks for being with us. The Florida Roundup is produced by WJCT Public Media in Jacksonville and WLRN Public Media in Miami. Heather Schatz and Denise Royal are our show producers.
Jason Zabka is the WLRN Director of Radio Programming and our technical director this hour. WLRN's Director of Radio Operations is Peter Meritz. We get engineering help each week from Doug Peterson, Charles Michaels, and Brady Corum. Our theme music is provided by Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Libos at aaronlibos.com. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for being with us. We'll be back next Friday at noon.